This episode of Finding Fairways was pre-recorded and is a production of Blarney Stone Broadcasting. Good morning, Michigan golfers. Welcome to another episode of Finding Fairways. This week, my co-host Kevin Frisch and I will have a two-segment discussion with Jeff Roth from the Boyne Golf Academy, who also played in the PGA at Harding Park last weekend. He'll give us his perspective of what the course was like, what it was like to be a spectator afterwards, and all the things that made up one of the most compelling PGA championships we've seen in quite some time. That's right here on your network, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Good morning and welcome to Finding Fairways, presented by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in studio with our original co-host, Kevin Frisch. Kev, I don't know when I've been more excited to see any major, let alone a PGA, and man, did they deliver.
They did. It was what a great tournament, fans or no fans. I mean, it was really good, and TV did a great job. I mean, I thought it was wonderful.
I agree with you. It was great being on the West Coast. We had a lot of primetime golf. Harding Park showed itself very well. They made it a hell of a lot tougher than I thought they were going to be able to.
They did, and they may be the one small knock on Harding Park. I mean, it's a great venue, don't get me wrong. But the greens, there's not a lot of undulation in those greens.
And no.
They made a ton of putts. I think it was Friday or Saturday. It seemed like everybody was making 50-footers or 30-footers, which is fine. But the beauty of
it certainly didn't happen on the weekend.
No.
Yeah.
It didn't happen on the weekend. they did make it.
I think it was Friday where, I mean, and it didn't happen all day, but there was like a four-hour period where, you know, guys were making 40 and 50-footers from all over the place. I think that more had to do with the pin placement that particular day.
Probably. Yeah. I would agree with that. I tell you what, that is a great venue. They could bring another major back there in a heartbeat. What tremendous play we had by young players.
Yeah. You know, Morikawa has just stepped right in without any learning curve.
No, these college players are coming on. Look at this generation, and they start getting it when they're young, when they're 10, 11, 12 years old now. They're getting custom fitted for equipment. They're playing in major events. They're getting instruction, great instruction at early ages, and the equipment is so good. So they go through that whole process and then get to college in the high level of golf they're playing in college.
That's why one of the reasons why Morikawa decided to play all 4 years at Cal. He was having a great time.
Right.
He got a degree from the business school there and continued to play really high level golf. You know, in the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the ACC, golf at that level is not too far removed from PGA, other than the fact that there's no fans.
Right.
And I'm fine with everything that happened in the tournament, but how much more atmosphere and intensity would have been brought with the 45,000 people packed onto a very small venue?
I totally agree. And to those younger guys, the atmosphere felt like a college tournament.
No doubt.
And when Morikawa was standing on the 16th tee, if there is, you know, if there's 15,000 people around that hole and there's an amphitheater around that green, and all of a sudden he pulls driver and people in the crowd are making comments like, he's going for it, he's got driver. Is his mental frame of mind in the same way that he could execute what I think is one of the greatest shots in major championship golf?
Yeah, I mean, it's right up there with, you know, Jack's 2-iron at 17 at Pebble Beach.
And Arnie's driving the green at Cherry Hills.
Yeah, it was really cool. We're going to spend a little bit of time here on Finding Fairways today talking more in particular about the PGA. We're going to talk to a participant at the PGA, our good friend Jeff Roth, who played at Harding Park the first 2 days.
Yeah.
Didn't fare very well, but none of the club pros made the cut.
Made the cut.
That is really rare.
He played very respectable.
He did, but that is extremely rare. You usually see two or three pros make the cut.
Right.
I think it speaks to how high the level of competition on the PGA Tour is right now.
Absolutely. And another factor that came in, and I did hear an interview from one of the club pros who missed the cut, and they were talking to him that one of the issues this year with the club pros is they haven't had the competitive events to play
right.
in. They didn't have a state
Yeah, they didn't
PGA
play the club pro tournament yeah. and all that. So we'll talk to Jeff Roth and continue our examination of the great PGA that just took place at Harding Park when we return here on Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. All right, it's time to check in with our friends at carlsgolfland.com. Tim Coyle is on the phone with me. And Tim, you and I were just talking about the latest and greatest in equipment. Titleist, probably the biggest and oldest name in all of golf, has a whole bunch of new stuff coming out, I hear.
Yeah, Titleist has some really awesome all-black finish products that we've seen in past seasons, them launching. They have some of their newest iron lines, T100S. And the T200, which a lot of people are familiar with, they're awesome and they've been selling great. And now they come out with a really sleek looking all black finish, that goes for shaft and grip. So they have some limited, they're really sharp looking. They're available to pre-order now. They'll be out in just a few weeks. And also a SM8 all black wedge as well to accompany those. The jet black is what they're doing. So it's, the stuff looks awesome. And obviously, Titleist performs great. So, and they're also fully available to fully customize on the website. So, if there's a specific grip or shaft or lie or loft you're looking for, they got everything going right now.
Plus the Volke wedges and the Scotty Cameron.
Yeah, you can order everything. It's directly on the website at Carl's Golf Line. Like I said, they're available for pre-order right now, and they launch in just a few weeks, the 28th, actually. And if you buy something directly through the website with one of these products, very few limitations. We have free two-day shipping on the stock product as well. So, just a few days and you'll have it in hand.
Plus, we haven't talked about it this year, but Titleist brought out a couple of new golf balls that have been wildly popular. The AXS? They still have the Pro-V, but they have the AXS and the True Soft. Both of them are great golf balls.
Yeah, the Titleist AVX is the one, and then the Tour Soft, and they actually just launched a Tour Speed golf ball that just launched last week as well. The Tour Speed falls right under the Pro-V1 line. We've been selling it like crazy. Actually, hard to keep it in stock. It's surprising how well it just flew out, but I guess being a Titleist, we shouldn't be surprised, right?
No, we shouldn't, and we know how important the ball is, but when you pair it with new Titleist equipment through carlsgolfland.com, it can't help but really improve your game. Tim, thanks for joining us, and we encourage everybody to go to carlsgolfland.com, the brand new streamlined site.
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, pal. Brought to us by carlsgolfland.com, Jerry Coyne and Kevin Frisch in studio. And joining us on the telephone from the Boyne Golf Academy is Jeff Roth, who just returned from San Francisco and Harding Park. Jeff, first and foremost, congratulations on making it into the PGA this year. We're very interested in getting your perspective on a lot of things that happened out there. So, tell us about San Francisco and Harding Park.
Yes. Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for having me this morning. It was a fabulous experience. A lot of time spent at the golf course and kind of preparing the strategy that I kind of pre-planned before I got there. And, I think in terms of preparation, I had all my ducks in a row. And when I got to the golf course, I was able to kind of further plot out my strategy. We got there Sunday, got the courtesy car, got checked into the hotel, took the COVID test, which was an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Never had something jammed up my nose that far.
Not since the 80s, at least, right?
Oh, God.
Just a joke.
Yeah, just a joke. But we, hilarious, because everybody's waiting in the parking lot. Nobody's allowed to get in until you get that positive test, and you get it online through your phone. So everybody
really
is kind of looking at one another. That's the way they did it. they had us wait outside. And so we're in the parking lot, caddies, players, any PGA people that were part of the inner workings of the tournament had to go through that initial COVID test on Sunday or Monday when they first arrived at the facility. So it took about an hour and 15 minutes. We got in there and got into the locker room, got things situated, and it was probably 3:30, and I kind of looked at my caddy and said, you want to go play some golf? And so he said, sure, let's go. And so we got to play 18 holes. Weren't planning on doing that at all, but we both felt pretty good.
I saw your photograph of the locker room that was unique, to say the least.
Yeah, everybody was well apart from one another. I was next to Sabatini on one side and Justin Rose on the other. I mean, it was the right thing to do given the circumstances, so that there wasn't any kind of question as to how safe the protocols in place were. So
I think they
PGA of America did all they could to run a good event, and ultimately they did.
I think they referred to it as the largest man-made locker room.
Well, they had to do something anyways, because right. I've been to Harding Park. They don't have really a locker room. It's a muni.
Right. No, exactly. Yeah. And they built, you know, I think that structure, if I'm not mistaken, might have originally been part of the merchandise thing that they were
like
building
it.
Up. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. So, hey, Jeff, talking about strategy and the way Harding Park played, the heavy air out there, talk a little bit about what your strategy was.
Well, pre-tournament, I looked at it as a par 76, and when I got there, it was that. I mean, there were six par fours I couldn't reach in two. Number two, number nine, number 12, 13, 14, and 18 were all par fours that I just couldn't reach in two.
Right.
Just the way it's set up with the wind conditions, especially 12, 13, and 14. Roth par was 76. And
you shot it.
Hey, you shot it.
The way I looked.
Yeah.
Well, I did it. I had a sloppy finish on Friday on 8 and 9. With a bogey and a double bogey, but other than that, I played some pretty decent golf and kept it in play pretty good and made some nice pitch shots into greens and hold some nice putts. I, you know, just to put it in perspective, I made 104 feet of putts on Thursday to shoot 74.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, the benchmark for having a good putting round on tour is in that 90 to 100 foot
exactly
putts of made in a round. So I think I called it right for myself going in. I executed my game plan pretty well. I wouldn't say it was the best I could possibly play, but it was certainly good playing. And at that level, unfortunately, the game has somewhat passed me by, because when you're hitting at 240, 250, and everybody else is hitting at 290, 300 plus, it's just a tough get. It means I'm playing a 7,900 yard golf course.
Well, as a guy who doesn't hit it very far, I often call that bringing a knife to a gunfight. respectable, Jeff.
And I described it as I was the Volkswagen racing Porsches all week.
Right.
One of the impressive things, though, is you did hit 71% of your fairways the first 2 days, and you were fifth in driving accuracy. So that's very impressive.
Yes, thank you. My caddy was kind of kidding me after the tournament ended. He said you led the tournament in one statistic for the week, and that was proximity to the tee after your tee shot.
That's a brand new
stat. We got to send that one to Faldo or Brandel Chambly.
Yeah. I led that statistic for the week.
But, well,
the golf course was extremely fair. It was extremely difficult. I really thought a bomber would win. I mean, Morikawa is not a bomber. He hits it certainly far enough to compete at that level. And he was, I think he led in proximity to the hole for the week, which was a very important statistic too, which means he had to drive it good enough, right? He didn't have to drive it great, but he had to drive it good enough to lead in that statistic.
Bomber's a weird term now, Jeff, because, Justin Thomas hits it pretty long, but he doesn't hit it Wolf long or Dustin Johnson long. When we saw that playoff between Morikawa and JT at Muirfield, they were about the same distance. So he's not lacking from the tee box. It's just not a weapon like it is for the Bryson DeChambeaus and those guys.
Yeah, no, for sure. I had the good fortune on Tuesday to play nine holes with Cam Champ and Scotty Scheffler.
Wow.
And nice. Those two guys are bombers. I mean,
yeah.
Champ hit it by me 89 yards on the seventh hole.
I believe it.
And Scheffler, yeah, Scheffler hit it by me 80 yards on the fourth hole. He actually got Champ by 4 yards.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's bombing it. Those guys are two of the longest out there for sure, and that was a treat to play with them for nine holes.
Very briefly, Jeff, Kevin mentioned in our opening segment that none of the – we didn't have a PGA pro, a club pro, make it into the field after the cut, which rarely happens. Usually you have a couple of guys. Do you mark that up to the lack of a PGA club pro circuit this year?
No, I think chalk it up to. I think if anything this year, PGA club pros had maybe a better chance to make it just because without the crowds and the fans and the electricity and the excitement to kind of take away from the experience of playing tournament golf. I know for me personally, it gave me a better chance to shoot better.
Okay.
I think tour pros, I think, kind of feed off the energy. They know how to feed off the energy a little bit more than club pros do. And so I thought there would be a handful that might make the cut, but unfortunately we didn't have anybody within, I think 144 might have been the low club pro, and it took 141 to make the cut. But I don't know how to really answer that other than the fact that talent goes a long way. And club professionals have talent, don't get me wrong, but at that level, I mean, we're just not as good.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just plain and simple. I mean, if you put tour professionals on a 6,800-yard golf course or a 6,600-yard golf course, club pros are certainly going to shoot better numbers. But then again, so are tour pros, yep, because they're going to be bombing it onto par fours and
yeah,
chipping it onto par fours. And so they're still going to play better. About 180th on the distance list, you're still hitting it on tour about 300 yards, 295 yards. So I don't know many club pros that can move it 295, 300 yards on a consistent basis.
When we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll talk to Jeff Roth about the experience that he had after actually playing in the first 2 days, being one of the few spectators allowed on the property, which has had to be a very unique experience. When we come back here, we'll talk to Jeff about that on Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in studio with Kevin Frisch, continuing our discussion with Jeff Roth, who was a participant last week at the PGA at Harding Park. And Jeff, as we were just talking off air a little bit, you had a really unique set of circumstances to be able to go and be a spectator at a spectatorless event in San Francisco.
Yeah, it was pretty unique. I got kind of lucky, because I wasn't planning on doing that. Saturday morning, my caddy and I were going to go out to the golf course and grab some breakfast and then head on out to San Francisco, do some sightseeing, the Golden Gate Bridge, et cetera. And a buddy of mine who was caddying in the event stopped to say hi, and I said, "What are you up to today?" And he goes, "Well, I'm going to go out to the golf course. I'm going to watch Tiger play. There's nobody watching. There's no gallery." And it just kind of clicked in my head like, oh, my gosh, that's what I should be doing. And so all of a sudden my plans changed, and we had some breakfast and went out and saw the Golden Gate Bridge for about 2 seconds and then hustled our way back to the golf course and, you know, just started following golfers. I followed Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth were playing together, so I got some neat video of them. And then we caught Tiger teeing off on number 5 tee. And, geez, I thought I'd only follow him maybe for the front nine, but, gosh, we ended up following the entire round. And there was literally, including the media types, there might have been 50 people following Tiger the entire round. You know, no fight in the crowds. I could, you know, stand from 10 feet, 12 feet away, you know, if he was in a fairway bunker, the rough, the fairway, the tee, and I just got some amazing video of all those guys that I was able to share with friends and put on Facebook and just share the experience. It was really amazing.
Why did you decide to follow? Is Tiger still that compelling of a figure for you?
Well, yes.
Okay.
It is. You know, he still went out there and he can still win majors. And, you know, he flared one off the seventh tee, which is a hole that you can drive it onto when the tee is up. And he just wasn't very happy with his shot. And, of course, I didn't get that on video, but there were some things that he said that weren't too kind to himself. And, you know, it was just typical Tiger, right? You
right.
hear stories, but to listen to it up close and personal for him to that was something you don't get to see on TV a whole lot, let alone standing 10 feet away from him.
You know, Jeff, regarding Tiger, you know, he finishes T37, and he's only played once this year. And I know people can be critical of him not performing well, but he's still hitting it well. And I thought he hit it really good on Thursday. On Friday, he just didn't make any
putts.
He
didn't make anything. It was horrible.
He didn't make anything all week. And what do you say about his game? And what do you think as far as, you know, if he could just play more golf, I think.
Well, it's a catch-22, isn't
it? Yeah, can he play? Mm-hmm.
There's so many variables now
right.
with regard to his health and his back. The worst case scenario, he hits it into that gunchy rough and tries to get one out of there, and God forbid something happens at impact, right? Because it could just take one swing. And, you know, he had the cold weather to deal with. And so how he plays his golf now is just so much different than what it used to be. And how he gears his seasons now are going to be just towards the majors. They're not going to be towards a FedEx Tour Championship. It's all going to be about gearing his schedule to the majors.
And, right.
And so, you know, we're barely going to see him. It'd be unlikely that he plays more than three events in a row. He's probably just going to play two events in a row, and one of them will be a major. So I wouldn't expect to see Tiger play a whole lot more in his career, because his health situation is just not going to change.
Hey, Jeff, I know you're going to spend most of the rest of the golf year back at the Boyne Golf Academy teaching, and that's probably one of the reasons why you took all the video that you had. I got a question for you. A discussion came up on Golf Channel. The guys were talking about Justin Thomas and Xander Schauffele as their dads are their golf coaches. And these guys are playing at a very high level right now. Jordan Spieth seems to have completely come apart. And so, I can't remember who it was, suggested that he has been overtaught, overanalyzed. And that kind of just hit me like a ton of lead. Like, I think that is his problem. I think he's looked too much at his swing, lost the feel for the game, and is in no man's land. What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's hard to argue against that. You know, sometimes coach-player relationships just reach a point where maybe you need a new set of eyes and a new perspective on things. There's the mechanical part of just swinging the golf club, and then there's the playing side of navigating the golf course with whatever tools and talent that you have. And when I watched Jordan swing, it just looked like he was playing a lot of his swings from his heels. It's hard to be athletic and dynamic when it looks like you're playing your golf swing from back on your heels. And, you know, I think he was trying to chase distance there for a while, and he's long enough. I mean, I think he's averaging in the 290s. It's not like you got to hit it 300 plus to compete, but you certainly have to be hitting it at least as far as Morikawa and,
and Spieth are hitting it. Yeah, who knows? Maybe something's on the horizon for him to at least get a fresh set of eyes and maybe a different perspective on how to play the game. Gosh, it's just such a hard question to answer. But, you know, from the outside looking in, I don't think anybody would be surprised if that happens within the next several months, where he just maybe gets a different look, kind of like what Jason Day did.
Yeah.
Right? Where he had his longtime coach and surrogate father, so to speak. You know, at some point in time, you have to break away and kind of own it on your own. That's a real sensitive topic, probably, to breach for the player and the coach. You know, when is the right time to make a change? And
hey, Jeff, you know, one of the other things that came out of this PGA Championship, and we were talking off air before the show, was how golf is becoming like tennis, where you might be peaking in your early 20s, and you know, like 6 or 7 of the players in the top 12 or 15 were in their early 20s, and there just seems like they're coming right out of college and going right into the competition, and there's no learning curve out there anymore.
Well, the college game has done a better job of preparing these young men to play tour golf, because they're traveling, they're playing tough golf courses. They're having to really balance their time management between studying and playing and practicing and working out. So these guys, when they hit the tour at 21, 22, they've in a lot of respects been there, done that. The only thing they have to learn are the golf courses that they play in the tour events, but the talent is already being put in place in college. It's really interesting to see how that's developed over the last 10 years. The thing that concerns me a little bit is, are we going to see longevity in those careers, or are we going to start seeing careers that only last 5 to 10 years or less, because they hit that peak and then they just go 0-4, you know. Jordan Spieth won 3 majors real quick, and he's kind of gone 0-4. I'd love to see these guys have long careers of 20, 25, 30 years, but I don't know if the incentive is in the game anymore to have those careers, both from a physical standpoint and just the whole mental standpoint of being able to persevere through a 25-year career.
Well, you certainly have had a long career yourself, Jeff Roth. And what's on the horizon for you?
Our section PGA Championship is next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday at Flint Golf Club. So that's coming up. And then the state open at the Bear in Traverse City is at the end of the month, first week in September. So couple right. big events coming up.
I think there's some home course advantage there at Flint, right? You were there for a number of years, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I was there for 13 years and played a lot of golf at Flint Golf Club. And it's a good golf course for my game. And hopefully I get a little momentum in the next few days and play some good golf next week. And then, of course, get ready for playing the Bear. Fun place to play, too. And some of the younger guys that are playing tour golf and mini tour golf will come back into the state and play, and it's always fun to see where my game sets up against them. So I look forward to the next 3-4 weeks of golf.
Well, we won't be surprised to hear Jeff Ross' name at the top of the leaderboard or hoisting some trophies again real soon. I know it's been a drought for you, Jeff. You haven't won in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, well, I enjoy playing. I enjoy competing, and the kids are getting younger and stronger and longer, and it just kind of pushes me to keep going myself.
Just keep hitting 70% of the fairways, and you'll be in the game.
Jeff Roth, thanks for joining us on Finding Fairways, brought to us by Carl's Golfland. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. On Finding Fairways, brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. Jerry Coyne and Kevin Frisch in studios. And Kev, it's great to have a relationship with J.R. Roth. such a good guy, such a solid player, and the plus the advantage of him being a teacher gives you a little bit more insight into the game.
Absolutely.
The game within the game.
His knowledge of both the golf swing and the teacher. I mean, I think for if you're taking lessons from Jeff, I would just love to go out and play a round of golf with him and learn about course management and what he does to manage a golf course. Because, you know, self-admittedly, he's not the longest guy.
No.
But when you hit 70% of your fairways, and you might have to hit a 3-iron instead of a 7-iron, or he knows how to manage his game. That would be really fun to go out and do that with him.
There's a lot to be said for that, about taking a playing lesson as opposed to just getting out and doing your normal go out on the range with 3 or 4 lessons. I mean, you gave a lot of lessons way back in the day. And a lot of players, you know, the hardest thing in the world is to take your range game onto the golf course.
Exactly.
And if you're having that issue, then whether you have a teacher or not, find somebody that you like, maybe that is a pretty good player on top of it, and go have a playing lesson. You're going to have to pay for it's 4 hours of instruction, but it's stuff you never really learn on the range.
No, and most amateurs don't pick up on, you know, where do you want to miss a ball?
Right.
You know, and I think Hogan once said, golf is all about your misses.
A couple things that we didn't get the opportunity to talk to Jeff, even though we had him for 2 segments. There's so many things that I want to dive into under this PGA. But I guess the thing that comes to the surface, what happened with Brooks Koepka? You know, 2 things happened. Number one, he got into position to win. Most people just assumed he was going to win the tournament. I mean, but pretty much the same thing happened last year at the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. You know, he was right there.
Yep.
And he's such a great closer in the majors that people just assume he'd win. I don't know if he lost at Pebble Beach as far as Gary Woodland just beat him.
Right.
But he pooped his pants on Sunday, on top of the fact that he insulted who was supposedly his best friend on tour.
Well.
And, you know, and he's starting to garner a reputation that, you know, maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he's like Bill Laimbeer. I don't care. This is I want people to hate me. It's kind of a different look for the PGA Tour.
Well, I think so. And first off, he's human now. So
I guess
everybody, let's figure that out. He is human. And I think another thing, and I'd have to go back and check his driving stats the first few days, because there were some players who didn't drive it well. But we're putting up numbers, and that's just not sustainable, because he started missing fairways over the weekend.
Yeah.
And he missed a lot of fairways on Sunday, and Harding Park was set up where if you missed the fairway, it was going to be a struggle.
Well, that's another thing I didn't get to talk to Jeff with. Now, I played Harding Park. I played a lot of golf in San Francisco, and I was going to ask Jeff to explain to people how cold it gets in San Francisco, and you can't really describe it. It is bone-chilling cold. Even though it's 60 degrees, it's like one of those damp fall days where it's hard to move through the ball with the same kind of speed that you normally do. It affects everything, and the balls just don't run out.
Especially heavy air, ball wasn't flying as far.
Right.
And go back.
But, I don't know what amounted. Maybe that was. Maybe the law of averages just caught up with Cap. I'm in gouge. Obviously didn't work tremendously well. It caught up with Dustin Johnson. But things considered, I mean, Colin Morikawa won that tournament. He shot 65-64. He had the 2 lowest rounds of the weekend.
Which is the, I believe, a PGA Championship record for the lowest weekend score.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
And, a lot of guys had 1 good day over the weekend. Nobody really had 2 good days over the weekend. So,
right.
You know, kudos to him. And you said you had him in your golf pool.
I watched him a couple times this year, and I said, this kid is the real deal.
But, golf in its 20s. Guys that are playing golf right now in their 20s are prepared to win.
I'm gonna do a little sidebar here. What's really going to be interesting is Steve Stricker gets 6 captain's picks. And I'm going to tell you right now, the average age of the Ryder Cup next year is going to drop significantly.
Yeah, well, that's another thing to look at. We've got a couple of majors coming up real soon, which is going to be pretty exciting. We've got Winged Foot.
Yes.
Phil's still hanging around. It's going to be that story. If Phil can shoot a decent round, Phil missed some putts on Friday and Saturday
yep.
that would have put him right in the mix.
He was knocking on the door.
He's still hitting it long
mm-hmm.
and pretty accurate, and his short game stunk too, but I saw that a lot. You know, the rough had a lot of guys confused, a lot of yep. great guys, and the bunker play from Harding Park was atrocious.
Well, and I want to know, did Harding Park do something with the sand or something? Tiger
no,
went
No, I think it just got it's so
got damp and heavy that,
yeah,
and firm.
It, yeah.
And Tiger was 0-for-5 or 0-for-6 in bunker saves the first two
Even
rounds.
Even Jason I mean, Day, look at Phil Mickelson is a great bunker player, but there is not a better bunker player on the planet than Jason Day.
Right.
And he, you know, you saw the occasional guy, you know, highlights guys chipping in from the bunker, but you saw just a catalog of average bunker play
right.
throughout that tournament.
I actually enjoyed it because so many times in these tour events, these guys are screaming for it to get in the bunker
yeah.
because the PGA Tour makes the bunkers so perfect that that's why they're great out of the bunkers. But I thought this was a nice little change of pace.
It's just like, you know, how difficult it is to play out of the bunker after it's rained a lot. I think you that's the consistency that you get. You know, the old saying, the coldest winter I ever spent was the summer I spent in San Francisco.
Right.
They usually play in May
yep.
or in the fall.
Right.
Summer golf in Northern California, especially in San Francisco, you drive across the Golden Gate Bridge or into Oakland, it'll be 62 degrees in San Francisco and damp and crappy, and 90 degrees in brilliant sunshine all around the Bay Area. It's a
right.
really weird anomaly that happens in San Francisco.
That's right. And, you know, one thing, you know, before we go, I want to let all of our listeners know that, you know, Harding Park was designed by William Watson back in 1925, classic old parkland. And William Watson also designed Belvedere
right.
Golf Club up here in Charlevoix. If you haven't gone up to play it, it's fantastic.
We got to get up there and play the redo because they just put, $2 million into it?
I'm not sure exactly what the number was, but what they did is they found William Watson's old original plans in a building that was being torn down in Charlevoix. What they discovered was how small the greens had shrunk up over the years. And so what they did is they came in and they peeled back a lot of the fringe areas and exposed all the undulations and the movements around the greens. And I'll tell you, these greens at Belvedere are tougher than those greens at Harding Park.
That's another one of those beautiful gems that we have in our backyard here in Northern Michigan. Thanks for joining us on Finding Fairways. As we like to say, find a fairway of your own, stick a peg in the ground and pound it down the middle. We'll be back here with you next week. Thanks to Carl's Golfland for sponsoring. It's time to check in with Ken Griffin from Boyne Golf. Ken, know how well the Boyne courses are holding up.
Just another great week to golf in Northern Michigan. You know, we were fortunate this week. We had great conditions for the Adidas State Pro-Am at Boyne Highlands. But day one, they played the Donald Ross Memorial Course, and then the final round was on the Moore. And just want to say congratulations to Dan Ellis and Chad Kermel. You guys won by 4. They finished at 15 under for 36 holes.
You know, it just goes to show you've had a number of high-line amateur golf events all season long at Boyne. Yet you can, with all the great course selections, it doesn't bother you in the least.
No. There's still plenty of good courses to choose from, even if we have one or two being utilized for an event, and still a lot of opportunities to play golf. And, you know, we're still endorsing the Play It Safe initiative, and we think that's been a big help to us. You know, we'll keep doing our part. We're going to ask the golfers to do the same so we can continue to play golf for the next 8 or 9 weeks and just keep getting out and enjoying it.
Yeah, and it looks to me like you've got another great round of packages for Stay and Play at Boyne in August.
Yeah, no, we've got Stay and Play and unlimited golf packages. So whether you need a night and 18 or whether you want a couple of days of unlimited golf, it's all still there. And the fall rates will start getting better. You know, if you look now into September, the rates will be going down. So we just have some great packages, you know, starting at 122 or less for Stay and Play.
And, or you got, what is it, 3 nights of unlimited golf for $500 at Boyne Mountain? I don't remember prices like this ever, Ken.
Yeah, it's really, well, when you think of you know, how late in the day, and we're losing a little bit of light. You can't play till 10 at night now, but you can still play till 9. So you still get plenty of time in for even more than 36 holes if you want. And, you know, to check out all the deals and tee times, lessons, packages, whatever it may be, you know, go to BoyneGolf.com or look on your favorite social media.
The best website in all of golf is BoyneGolf.com. Ken, thanks for joining us. We'll see you out on the fairways at Boyne.
Gary, thanks, folks.